Broadcasting from Boston, Massachusetts, the Smart Cities Podcast is the only podcast dedicated to all things smart cities. The podcast is the creation of ARC Advisory Group's Smart City Practice. ARC advises leading companies, municipalities, and governments on technology trends and market dynamics that affect their business and quality of life in their cities. To engage further, please like and share our podcast or reach out directly on Twitter at Smart City Viewpoints or on our website at www.arcweb.com/industries/smart-cities.
Hello and welcome to the ARC Smart City Podcast. My name is Larry O'Brien. I'm a member of the Smart Cities team here at ARC. And today we're going to be talking about smart city platforms. And I have with me here today Mr. Anthony Vary of Integrated Network Concepts. How are you doing, Anthony?
I'm doing well today. Thank you, Larry.
So we're going to talk about smart city platforms today, but I think why don't we start off with you telling us a little bit about yourself and your company, Integrated Network Concepts, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. I've been in communications and IT for over the past 17 years, with my main focus over the last 5 or so years being in smart technology, wireless networks, and cybersecurity. And I also have my Lean Six Sigma black belt that I've had for over 8 years, where I've been helping clients improve efficiencies using Lean methodologies and Six Sigma. And what I've noticed is over the years, clients and cities have come to me because of my vast knowledge on many different vendors, many different technologies and protocols, to ask me my opinion and my advice before they write RFPs and RFBs and RFQs and so forth. So I've been at Integrated Network Concepts for the past 2 years. Generally, we get viewed at as a managed service provider, a systems integrator, but our real value add going above being a reseller of technology products and services and software is our engineering services. That's where we're able to provide not only the product, but engineer and configure these technologies and these products to work properly based on your environment and your network. So that's where INC's value add comes in.
Yeah, and that's a big part of it. We first met at the forum, right? You spoke at our ARC Orlando forum actually earlier this year, like back in February.
Yes.
In our track on the value of smart city platforms, and I thought your presentation was great, so I thought it'd be good if we could talk today on the podcast, because so many people don't even know what a smart city platform is. I think a lot of communities and cities right now are focused on implementing silos of technologies in specific functional areas, but you know, to me, smart city platforms is the thing that really ties together information from all these different silos and functional areas into one environment. Let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, what's your definition of a smart city platform, and how do you articulate that to your prospective clients?
Yes, and well, let me address one thing before I get into the definition of what I think a smart city platform is. You hit on a very, very key point saying cities are deploying technology solutions that are siloed. The purpose of smart technology for cities and smart cities was to help break down these silos, because they've already been siloed for years. And now we're falling back into the same problem of using a technology to solve a problem, but then it gets siloed and the information isn't shared with other departments and other service providers and other people throughout the city. And that's where the importance of breaking down these silos and sharing this information, so there's not duplication of technology solutions or different solutions being procured for the same problem. So this could really help cities cut down on waste and also be more efficient with their time, being able to share data across many different departments. So when we get back to the smart city platform definition, what I view it as is a smart city platform is a software platform that operates basically just as a single pane of glass, and it's going to display data that's collected from various sources. I mean, that could be from IoT sensors, video surveillance cameras. It could be from other sensors deployed outside or inside throughout the city. And then they're across multiple applications, different agencies and departments, and all this data is collected in a repository, which we would say is a smart city platform. Then within this platform, this information can be displayed throughout all city departments for people to access. And this is where the city, well, you would have to have people delegated for these tasks to set up authorization and permission levels of what they have access to see or what they have access to edit or to share. And the primary focus is to display this information, this raw data, and then have alarms and alerts set to show areas of concern or outliers or inefficiencies, so then you know where to take action upon. And you could do this in-house, you could rely on other applications and analytics software. But again, to just close this back all up on the definition of smart city platforms, it encompasses all the city's infrastructure departments and their services. And it's more advanced than other platforms that we've seen in the past. And it's able to work with a wide variety of data. It doesn't matter what language it's in or what protocol. So a true smart city platform will be able to take data from all different types of data to display right. It in a repository.
Yeah, and I think data is probably the root of the problem at the end of the day, right? We have all these different systems generating hundreds of thousands of data points, all in different formats, right? Depending on the system vendor or the vintage, mm-hmm. you know, or the version of the system, because a lot of these operational systems out there are maybe 20 years old, and then you have brand new stuff. And so to me, the big value behind this, one of the big things anyway, is being able to put everything into a common context. And like you said, a single pane of glass, single visualization environment to allow people to make decisions. And it's always, you know, it's been difficult trying to articulate this to people sometimes because they are so focused on implementing these siloed solutions, right? We have this problem, so we need to put an intelligent transportation system in or an intelligent lighting system in. What's the value in being able to see everything? You know, and to me, right. The answer is a lot of times what happens in one system is going to have an impact on what happens in another system. So unless you have that holistic view of everything, you're not really going to know what's going on or how it affects other aspects of your city.
Oh, I totally agree.
Yeah. But it hasn't, I think, you know, for me, it's been kind of a, you know, evangelism mission, just trying to tell people that this technology is here and it has value and here's why.
Yeah. And it goes beyond the technology and the software that is available today and even last year and in years past. Cities struggle to come together as a whole because there are so many different departments within a city. And they almost focus with blinders on and focusing on just their daily business at hand. And a lot of their processes are still pen and paper, files, mm-hmm. file cabinets. They haven't even finished making the digital transformation at this point in time. And without making that progress through the digital transformation, it's really hard to get all these departments and share that information across all the departments within a city.
Yeah, it's impossible. To me, this is the one thing that allows that to happen. And we're seeing it right now, right? A lot of cities are implementing smart city platforms as in response to COVID-19. I mean, we've actually seen an acceleration of a lot of these digital transformation programs in cities right now. Are you seeing the same thing? Or?
Yeah. So what has happened or what I've seen is a lot of smart city projects and consultation and initiatives were put on hold or completely canceled after the pandemic started making a bigger impact here in the here in the U.S. Then it switched over to, I was getting a lot of requests on what can we do to start opening buildings and opening businesses back up safely so that people could be inside during a pandemic without getting each other contaminated or spreading the virus. So that's where cities were looking at solutions and looking just for information. They wanted to, they're looking to be educated. So it's almost a double-edged sword, though, too, because the pandemic and the shutdown that we had earlier in the year caused cities and enterprise to lose a lot of money. So their budgets are cut by a third or frozen for the rest of the year. So what can they do on a reduced budget and with people really not being in buildings like we used to? It's hard to recommend some of these solutions that are costly that they weren't even looking at implementing until the pandemic hit. So we have to be strategic. And what I have tried to showcase to them is there's no silver bullet. There's not one solution that's going to make it totally safe for everybody to come back in buildings. But all these solutions, each one of them has an incremental impact on the sanitization or the disinfecting of the building to improve the quality of health in the building. And the other solutions also improve knowing how many people are in the building. Are they social distancing? Do people have temperatures? If they do, then they probably don't even get access into the building. And being able to have touchless access control, touchless. We've seen, obviously, water dispensing in bathrooms and soap dispensing and hand drying, but implementing touchless solutions elsewhere. There's also door and window handles that are antimicrobial. But a lot of buildings went the cheap route and went with other door handles that were maybe a few dollars cheaper. But when you're buying 500, it makes a big impact on the budget. But there's antimicrobial metals that are used on door handles that don't allow viruses like this to live on those surfaces. And then it gets into HVAC. There's PCO and there's UVC lighting used in HVAC and bipolar ionization. How do these impact the air quality? Bringing in outside air helps. Looking at the humidity level in the building, keeping that between a 40 to 60% humidity level helps as well. So a lot of these things you don't know because there's not sensors or data coming back, given building owners all this information. So there's a lot of solutions out there that can help, and cities are looking to see what they can or cannot do. But as you said, because of the pandemic, they realize, hey, we don't even know where people are at throughout our city at any given point. Indoors, are they in buildings?
That's true. Yeah.
If they're in buildings, which buildings are they in? Does one building have 2,000 people and another only has 20? And then even outdoors, are people walking? Are they sitting? Are they riding bikes or scooters? Or are they driving? And if they're driving, are they in a car, a bus, a train, a taxi?
Yeah, it helps to have a view of everything that's going on as far as the movement of people. And as we reopen office buildings and commercial buildings, you know, people are coming back. I've read a lot about that recently, and we talk about it in the study we just did, is, you know, this, I don't want to say the rush to reoccupancy, but, you know, the trickle to reoccupancy is going to require some, you know, a lot more sophisticated management than what we've had in the past.
Yeah. And so some of the clients I've been speaking with, it's not only about these solutions to improve the indoor air quality and indoor sanitization of surfaces, but I tell them it's also very important to display the data so that visitors and patrons see what these buildings have done and to see how the air and the surface is performing. What the health of the building is. That's where you build the trust level of your citizens.
Do you see the rush to more remote work being a catalyst for adopting these smart city platforms as well? Or, I mean, does the current infrastructure, can they support all these remote workers securely?
So the cities, So the city is like a business, and they have city workers and staff in City Hall, in public services. A lot of public services can't be remote when it comes to parks and recreation, police, fire. But some City Hall workers have been remote, and some cities have laid off people because of the decline of services being provided, the decline on their budget. And cities inherently have to try to run a balanced budget. So if there's cuts in their budget and their money coming in, and by cuts on or decrease in money coming in, I'm talking about less sales tax coming in, less income tax being paid to the city, and less property tax being collected. So when all three of these are going down, the cities are forced to make cuts. Then you're talking about remote work. Are they able to handle all the remote workers via their network? And is it secure? That's where we have to look at how their network's configured and looking at their security. Do they have two-factor authentication? Do they have enough VPN licenses? And do they have enough bandwidth? So a lot of times, these are just the beginning questions that need to be asked to be able to help cities understand where they currently sit and where they need to be. And it has to happen fast because the pandemic happened fast and people needed to be able to work from home quite rapidly. So
yeah,
there was a big undertaking several months back.
Right. And it's still going on. And we see anyway, COVID is being sort of, again, the catalyst that accelerates this trend towards more permanent remote work. Mm-hmm. And not just people, you know, in cubicle farms, but people at the OT level, at the operational technology level, who have to do things like, you know, monitor the performance of a water treatment plant or, you know, power distribution network or, you know, a building automation system for a fleet of buildings or what have you. You know, but a lot more of these operational tasks are going to have to be done remotely as well.
Yeah, and you bring up a couple of key points where building automation systems are very beneficial, but a lot of buildings don't have robust building automation systems that allow remote monitoring and remote management. So I haven't truly seen the trend on how much it's going up. The interest is there and it is definitely rising. But on the procurement side, I don't really have a good answer to tell you on if there's big traction to going right now.
Yeah. We see increasing demand. I mean, we do sort of the market numbers for all the vendors and market forecasts and things like that. And, you know, we actually see the market increasing somewhat, you know, in spite of what's happening right now, because there's a lot more attention being paid to these platforms than there was in the past. Which kind of brings us to the technology discussion, right? And what goes into these platforms, because I think there's, you know, a lot of perception in the marketplace that these are very complex or they, you know, can take a long time to implement. But one of the things we've tried to emphasize is that you don't need to take on, you know, a huge, far-reaching project, you know, with a massive scope. You can, and you mentioned this too, you can kind of start small and look at a couple of use cases and kind of build from there.
Yes.
Do you have some examples of that or?
So there's some on the private side and in private building owners, but on the city side, a lot of cities own numerous buildings in their downtown areas. And it's important for them to understand that the investment that they're making is not short term, that this will be a long term value add for them going forward. Even once there's a vaccine for the current pandemic and things open up more in a couple years down the road, people start forgetting about the pandemic that we went through. It always comes back to data, and knowing is better than not knowing. And when you have information and data, you're able to improve processes and situations. When you don't have data, you don't understand where your current benchmark is or where your current status is. and it makes it hard to make decisions without the data.
Yeah, you're blind. And we see that too. We see, you know, obviously everybody's totally concerned about responding to COVID right now and managing, you know, as things kind of get back to normal, managing that whole transition. But in the long term, everybody wants to be resilient. That's the big watchword that we hear out there, moving from response to resiliency in the long term.
Yeah, and another thing that cities need to be cognizant about is some of these old buildings, and especially even if they don't own them, even if they're privately owned, those are still a revenue base for the cities. And a lot of older buildings, building owners generally aren't going to invest money in technology into buildings if they're already making a decent profit. Those are investment assets for them. But if they are older, new construction is implementing a lot of new smart technology. These old buildings are going to fall behind. Now companies are going to be looking at different work options, maybe less office space, but even though it's less office space, it might need to be different envisioned office space to where it's more wide open or it's more compartmentalized but still spread out. So they're trying to look at new solutions as far as envisioning what the office space can be for the future. So it could allow down the road for more people to still be at work and for it to make sense.
And smart city platforms are a good way to enable you to do that.
Smart city platforms will tell you a lot. It'll give cities even the ability to monetize the data that they capture, especially, the data is basically like market research. They could tell companies looking to move into a downtown area where the most traffic is, at what intersection or what street, so that they know where they would want to look at office space. Or they might want to look for a space where there isn't a lot of traffic so their employees can get in and out if they're not very customer-based. For customer traffic. So there's a lot of ways that cities can then use that data to monetize it.
Yeah, that's a good point too. And also for cost savings too, right? I mean, if you have a bunch of empty buildings, you know, how do you know you're really saving on energy costs? And, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of buildings out there with the power still on when it shouldn't be on and, you know, things of that nature. You just don't have the visibility into what's really going on in real time.
So that's where when you transition these buildings to be smart buildings or to even become smart, healthy buildings, then yes, that building is smart and has all this data being collected. But now you need a repository for all the buildings that you have that are smart. That way, as you said, then as a city as a whole, you could see that information, see where your energy savings is, because then you're able to adjust the temperature, the airflow, the lighting, so that you're not wasting energy.
Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about some of the underlying technologies and maybe selecting a system and some things to look for and watch out for. And one of the big discussions in the marketplace today is the one around open source versus proprietary technology, right? We see a lot of sort of open source data initiatives happening right now. You know, like Fiware, for example, or Project Haystack, right, or a couple that I've, you know, covered recently. Can you give us your thoughts on, you know, what's better, open source versus proprietary, or some of the pitfalls, or?
Yeah. So I'm always try to be unbiased. And when I talk about any type of solution, or even when it comes to stuff like this, open source versus proprietary. So when I talk about open source, when we're looking at pros, they're usually free to use. They're free to add or change anything that you need to within that smart city platform. You'll get easier buy-in from your residents and citizens in your city when they know you're not spending, you know, $500,000 on something that they might not even understand how it works or what it provides for them. But some of the cons, though, it might not be as secure. Generally, it's not as secure as a proprietary solution. Usually, it's not as stable. If you have any trouble, if you need some support on it, the support usually isn't nearly as good as a proprietary solution. And generally, you're going to spend more time customizing it to meet your needs and specifications for your smart city platform. So you're going to have to dedicate resources to customize it and to have it work for you the way that you need it to. Because usually they're pretty basic out of the box when you're looking at open source, with the options of doing just about anything. But those options come with time and labor. And then if you're looking at the proprietary, the opposite side, what are some of their pros? They have advanced capabilities right out of the box. They also, most of them that I've come across, and we're talking usually 8 to 10 that I've seen, have built-in reporting, graphing engines, great alert and monitoring capabilities to send emails and text messaging, and you get superior support and training. So sometimes some of these solutions come with a free week of training, so that your team understands how to get into these platforms, set authorization and permission levels, set up different dashboards so they could show information that's relevant to them and stuff that they need to follow. But then there are cons with proprietary as well. They can be very expensive. Sometimes a few of these are very difficult to modify or change to make it look the way you would like it to be. And then there are some pitfalls here where there's limitations that usually aren't initially disclosed up front, and you don't find these out until after you've procured some of these proprietary solutions. These companies aren't going to tell you their flaws or why you should not consider them.
Right.
They always highlight reasons why you should buy them and how they beat the competition. But this is why I believe it's important that cities do their due diligence and look for an unbiased advice so that a smart city expert can give them that inside knowledge on the pros and cons of different competitors. Because if you just look at the marketing, every solution is going to be top notch and the best one.
Absolutely.
On
the market. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it kind of depends on your application too, right? Because in my experience, you have a few smart city platform providers that kind of play across the board in many different application segments, but a lot of them tend to focus on maybe two or three, or, you know, maybe lighting and parking and, you know, some other applications or building automation or water, wastewater. That's my experience anyway.
That's definitely true. So there's a lot of things that every city is different and every city's needs are different. There's not like an off the shelf solution that will work for every city. So the city does need to spend time to brainstorm and write down information and prioritize what's important to them and what they're looking for in a solution when it comes to a smart city platform. And what are we talking about? They should be looking at the functionality of the platform. What do they need the platform to do? What type of data does it need to handle? What departments is the data going to be coming from? Mm-hmm. And what areas of your city is it going to be coming from? Then look at interoperability. Does the smart city platform work within your current network infrastructure? Or is this a solution that now we have to buy another server? It has to be on-premise. That's another cost. Or is it a solution where you have to buy a lot more cloud storage? So understanding that is imperative. And understanding the integration, how time intensive is it going to be to install the smart city platform in your city's network infrastructure? Another one is scalability. So there's a couple caveats with this. One, you don't want to buy something that's just going to work for the opportunity at hand today if you're just doing a small deployment and testing something out. If it's free, yeah, there's no problem. But if you're buying a proprietary solution, you don't want it to work just today. You want it to be able to work 5 years down the road from now as you expand and add more data collection devices in your network and progress through the digital transformation. But you also have to gauge, you don't want to buy something that's very large scale and can handle everything 5 years down the road from now, and you're paying top dollar, but you're only using 10% of it. So you don't want to waste taxpayer money. So it's always good to ensure that the platform can scale when you need to, but isn't costly, and you could pay for what you're using now and then have the option to pay more when you need to scale up for larger opportunities. And then there's always security. When you digitize information, that opens up vulnerabilities for data being breached and hackers getting in. So what security comes with the smart city platform that you're looking at? What's built in? What add-ons are there? So you might not need everything as far as security from day one, but as you have more and more data, you might want to be able to know if you could add other security, or if there's security options that your CISO and InfoSec team could do on the network infrastructure side, which there always is. So just understanding that. And the number one key piece of information that I could give city officials is to, from day one, from the very first meetings, on anything related to any software in your city, doesn't even have to be smart platforms, smart city platforms, or video surveillance, or any IoT networks, or smart street lighting, anything related to services as far as software or infrastructure, get your CIO or CTO or your CISO involved in these meetings from day one. This will make the process much smoother with a higher chance of success when they're included and they could understand what the city's looking at and give their input and give their feedback, because that is crucial. And the last thing that I would say when looking at smart city platforms is understanding the user experience. Make sure to ask these companies, what do you have as far as a demo? I don't want to just see something on a slide presentation or you go through a couple dashboards. I want my team to be able to go through and use this for a week or so. If it's not user-friendly or if it's difficult to understand or navigate through, it doesn't matter what price it is or if it was the best solution at the cheapest price, nobody's going to use it if it's too hard or it's not user-friendly.
Yeah, to me, you touched on two big things that I like to touch on, too, that it's a project planning process, right? And if you don't get the key stakeholders in early, you could run into problems, right? Because you're not going to meet your requirements. And you need to develop those requirements also as part of that project planning process. I totally agree. You need to bring all those stakeholders in. And it has to be usable. I came out of the automation world, and a good parallel to that is advanced control applications, right? Uh-huh. Where, you can get a big return on those, but if you don't have somebody there, with a PhD, it could sometimes be hard, to keep these things up and running. Yes. In the long term. So it's got to be sustainable and usable too. But they've done a lot to make these systems much more usable, and user friendly, and particularly in terms of visualizing lots of complex data, right? And turning it into something that you can actually understand and, provide some action on if you need to. And the training's come a long way. And I think the other thing too is I've seen a lot of companies focusing on solutions that are very scalable, from a smaller solution that may not require a lot of on-site time, for an engineer to be there to install it, and really doing a lot of it, over the air, if you will, just to sort of scale up. So I've seen some activity there too, which should make it easier for people. Any other use cases? I mean, we've talked a lot about building automation, and I think that is probably the biggest sector right now, is probably, the built environment. But are you looking at the other use cases?
So cities are always looking at ways that they can improve. Not only they want to be able to improve safety and security for their residents. They want to still be able to be innovative, to still attract businesses, to stay in town, to offer jobs and attract new businesses to come to their city as well. And now everybody's also looking at their carbon footprint. So cities using smart city platforms can gain key insight at traffic patterns, congestion, CO2 emissions based on cars being stuck in traffic or looking for parking. So this could look give cities insight on where parking should be or where they could deploy smart parking solutions, smart parking garages, open up other areas for urban parks and recreation within the city, even repurposed buildings, old vacant office buildings, especially now with a lot of remote workers.
Yeah,
they may be able to rezone them and have them turn into a multi-dwelling unit for multi-tenant residents. And then there's always a benefit, I believe, in cities closing down some inner city streets and then using them for open ways where people could traverse walking or on scooters. And then we've seen a lot of autonomous vehicles as far as shuttles and cars are on their way to where these could traverse around the inner city and have less congestion of traffic and cars trying to look for parking, driving around the city a couple times, a few blocks here and there. So there's other use cases that these sensors and that will carry data back to a smart city platform could give cities information on how to strategically plan for economic development and urban planning that they didn't have previously.
Yeah, these platforms can help cities make more money and improve health and safety, too, and also reduce downtime. That's one of the things you talked about in your presentation back in Orlando was you know, reducing unplanned downtime, which is a huge cost.
It is, because most cities don't understand what it costs them for an hour or a day of downtime. When you add up all the employees that aren't able to work, if part of the network is down, that adds up quickly. And then when people aren't able to get services or things that they're used to from the city, that adds dissatisfied residents or even third-party vendors and so forth. So downtime is definitely a part of it for them to understand what it does cost them for downtime. And then that way they might be able to allocate more money to prevent downtime in the future.
Right. Well, thanks, Anthony. Do you have any resources that you'd like to point our listeners to?
So when it comes, I'm always a proponent of cybersecurity, and I think
Me
cities really need to conform and try to follow the NIST framework for cybersecurity. I think that's an easy way that cities can do it in-house. And if they have trouble understanding what they need to do as far as the framework for cybersecurity that NIST provides, which is free, can be found online very easily, then if you can't do it, or if you're struggling or you don't have the resources, then you could reach out to a technology provider or a managed service provider to come in and help and assist. But data is going to be paramount to not only collect, but also protect. When we're talking about autonomous vehicles and 5G and other IoT networks, that when these vehicles are traversing on wireless technology and data, the uptime of these networks is paramount. If there's any disturbance or the network goes down and or disrupted or attacked, people are in these vehicles, especially autonomous vehicles. And before, if it's just a data breach, if someone breaches, like you hear about large companies suffering a data breach, yes, they may have stolen your credit card information or have access to your social security number. but your life wasn't in peril. When we're talking about vehicles and being autonomous, and your people are inside these vehicles, relying on these networks is crucial in cybersecurity to
yes.
make sure that they're safe and secure and up is also crucial.
Yeah, and we see the same thing. There's more of a focus now from the bad guys on OT level cyber attacks. So these are cyber attacks that actually have an impact in the physical world, you know, whether it's shutting down a power grid or, like you said, trying to disrupt, you know, automated vehicle systems or traffic management systems or, you know, 5G. I mean, these are things that are trying to happen in the physical world now. You know, it's not just a compromise of your credit card number or your personal data.
Right.
So it's starting to have a direct impact on human health and safety.
Exactly.
Yeah, I would also point people to the IEC 62443 standard in addition to the NIST framework that you mentioned. If they're interested in getting more information about cybersecurity in an OT level environment, we cover that standard a lot as well. Where can people go to find out more about your company?
You can definitely reach out to me and Integrated Network Concepts at www.integrated.net. You'll be able to reach me via email or LinkedIn or a phone number to reach out by going to that website.
Great. And of course, you can access more about what ARC Advisory Group does in smart cities and cybersecurity and other areas by going to www.arcweb.com. That's www.arcweb.com. Anthony, I want to thank you for being with us today.
Larry, it's always been a pleasure.
Yeah, really good discussion on smart city platforms. And we look forward to talking with you next time on the ARC Smart City Podcast.
Okay, thank you, Larry.
Thanks.
Broadcasting from Boston, Massachusetts, the Smart Cities Podcast is the only podcast dedicated to all things smart cities. The podcast is the creation of ARC Advisory Group's Smart City Practice. ARC advises leading companies, municipalities, and governments on technology trends and market dynamics that affect their business and quality of life in their cities. To engage further, please like and share our podcast or reach out directly on Twitter at Smart City Viewpoints or on our website at www.arcweb.com/industries/smart-cities.